Have you been listening to the podcast and getting value from the show? If so, I've got a small favor to ask, because over the next few months, we're going to be making some changes to better serve you. Now, I could keep creating episodes based on what I think would be most helpful, but I would much rather get this right. So instead of guessing, I want to understand where you are right now and the real challenges you, your organization, and your team are facing. That's why I've put together a very short 90-second survey. It'll help me better understand you and how I can serve you at a much higher level. And as a thank you, the first 30 people who complete it will receive a free signed copy of one of our books. To take part, just go to the show notes and click the link titled Leadership Survey. Or you can go directly to letsgrowleaders.com/podsurvey. PODSURVEY. It'll take less than 2 minutes. I really appreciate your input. It will genuinely help shape the future of the show.
I would watch really smart people playing a political game and holding back their ideas.
Hey, it's David, and you're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul, your source for practical leadership inspiration, tools, and strategies you can use to achieve transformational results without sacrificing your humanity or your mind in the process.
Welcome to the show today. It's an exciting day here at Let's Grow Leaders headquarters. Today is the day that Courageous Cultures hits the shelves. It's available for sale now everywhere. And I have a very special guest for us today, a longtime listener of the show, supporter, but a first-time guest. I am so excited to welcome both my co-author, partner in life, and best friend, Karen Hurt, to the show. Karen, thank you for being here. It's about time.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here, and it is an exciting day.
So we have not discussed this interview whatsoever. I wanted to make it spontaneous and drop maybe some things that haven't been talked about elsewhere, maybe. But you've listened to the show before, so you know the first question that I ask every guest, and that is, what is your earliest memory of yourself as a leader?
Yeah, for me, and my cousins always talk about this, that I was always leading shows. So Thanksgiving, we would rehearse and we would build this whole Christmas show, and then we'd have to have extra time and rehearsals. And that was a lot of fun. So I think it's ironic now that I'm a keynote speaker. I do shows for a living, right?
Absolutely. It's so fun seeing all the different ways that leadership manifests itself. So bringing together a group of people to do something creative and that no one person could do, those are your earliest memories. How old were you when you were doing that?
Oh, well, I'm 3.5 years older than my sister and cousins. So I would say I must have been at 5.
5 or 6, and you were already pulling people together to get things done. I love it. All right, well, let's talk about Courageous Cultures. So this book has been a lot of work. We've invested 3 years of research and interviews and working with all of our clients and organizations around the world. Let's start with, what are you most proud of with regard to this book?
That we're still married. I would say that it's the research, that this is really research-based. And, you know, our first book, Winning Well, was really based on many of our own stories and some of our early clients. But this one, you know, we worked with University of North Colorado, and we did the quantitative studies and then the deep dive case studies, and then all of our work and all those programs all over the world. And so I feel really good that the tools, we're still known for our very practical tools, that the tools we were able to call out from that are really grounded in this research.
So if you had to sum up what Courageous Cultures is all about, I mean, why should a leader invest the time to read this book and use the tools?
It's really about tapping into the very best thinking and ideas of every employee in your team. And so it's creating an environment where it feels safe to speak up, and then giving people the tools and a process to tap into their best practices.
Okay. You know, we get asked all the time why we wrote this book, right? I think every interview we've ever done,
yep,
they ask, why did you write this book? And we know the reasons why, but I want to see if you can't take it a level deeper. And the way I want to ask this question is, why this book? There are so many books on culture and leadership and so many different resources available. From your perspective, I know my answer, but why did we need to write this one at the time we did? What separates it from the other great books and great resources that are out there?
I know for me, you know, there were times in my career where I did not feel like the leaders that I was working for were leading in a building a courageous culture. Right? So there was some fear, intimidation, shutting people down, do this my way. And I would watch really smart people playing a political game and holding back their ideas. And I knew what these ideas were that people were afraid to bring out. And it was just safer to stay silent. And, you know, when I thought, you know, about what is the book that I would regret not having written if something were to happen? You know, what is the legacy message? This really is an important part of that.
That's powerful. This is fun for me. We have not had these discussions. I've saved up some of these questions to dive a little bit deeper. Let's take it to the practical level. Of course, we are all about practical, giving leaders practical tools, and Courageous Cultures is definitely a roadmap to help you build teams where silence isn't safe and effort is everything, and moving your team from safe silence in your organization to consistent contribution. So let's get practical. What are a few of the things that leaders should be doing as they try to build a courageous culture?
Yeah, it starts with clarity. So you really need to be clear about two things. One, clear that you really do want people's ideas. Not just, oh, I casually want people's ideas, but this is how we must do things around here. And then clear about what a good idea would accomplish. And that getting really specific, and what we've really been finding, I think has been fascinating in our Courageous Cultures programs, is that the more specific the leader can be about, I need ideas about this topic, that is very empowering for people. And so clear that you want them and clear about what a good idea would accomplish. So for example, right now, what we need is ideas about how to help people be more productive while working from home and also not lose their minds, you know? And so what ideas do you have around balancing that? And when we've been asking that question, it's amazing the creativity that's coming up and people, that things that the leader may not have necessarily come up with themselves. So clarity comes first, and then it's curiosity about deliberately asking. So asking courageous questions, which are specific and vulnerable. And so, you know, what is one thing that's really ticking off our customers? You know, it's specific. You're only asking for one thing, which feels safe and easy. And it's humble because you are saying, you know, I assume we're doing something that's ticking off our customers. And then teaching people how to bring you a better idea. So, you know, I love our idea model because I love acronyms, right? But, you know.
Yes, you do.
Why is it? Wouldn't be a book written by us if it didn't include a few acronyms. But why is this idea interesting? D, is this, what makes this idea doable? E, is this idea engaging? Meaning, who else would think this is a good idea? Who else do we need to bring on board? And then A, a couple of key actions to start. And that's the other thing that seems to be really working in our programs when we just say, run it by this model. It seems to streamline the thinking.
So, and you just mentioned the programs we've been running. Can you talk about the experience that business leaders are having with Courageous Culture? Specifically, we are recording this right in the middle. It's late July 2020. Whenever you might listen to it, that's when we're recording it. We're right in the middle, continued middle of this pandemic and global racial equity movement and the toughest economy in 100 years. We didn't know any of that when we set out to write this book. I mean, it's been 3 years in the making. And here we are. Talk to us about the response and reception from business leaders and why.
Yeah, I think we are in an extraordinary time. And what we are finding is that leaders everywhere are having to really think about how do we do the best we can with what we have from where we are. And for some folks, that means we're all working from home. For others, it's we can't work from home because we are in hospitals, or and we must figure out how to manage the fear, keep people safe, and do the right things for our customers and for our employees. And nobody has the answers to that. I mean, that is really the truth. And so for what is
no one person has the answers at any rate.
Right. So to have the humility to say, I've never led in a pandemic before. You can't go to Amazon and buy that book, right? But what you can do is tap into the hearts and minds and really listen to the best ideas and come together and to do that. And so what we're really finding, and it's been interesting, all the phone calls we're getting, can you help us lead during uncertainty and change? Can my favorite one was the executive who called and said, can you come and help me help my team exhale? Because we've been at this for a while, because they were a global company. So they had started with the pandemic in China and then in Europe and now in the United States. And that program, I think of all the programs we've built, is one of the most intrinsically satisfying, because we were helping them deal with the current circumstances and also talking about real business issues. And that balance is, I think, what is attractive right now for people.
And speaking of real business issues, we tackle and interviewed and investigated and share many, many different business stories and examples in the book. Are there one or two that stand out to you as either particularly fun or interesting or useful?
Well, maybe I'm biased because this one's from my sister. But I really love this technique because it is so important and it's simple.
And everyone can do it.
Yeah. So we have called this in the book the patient experience, but it could be your customer experience, or if you're a teacher, the student experience. You could use this in any kind, a parishioner's experience, right? It could be used in any context. So what this Jill, her at WellSpan Health, shared a best practice where when they have an important decision to make or they are thinking through a strategy, they designate one person in the meeting to step out of their regular role and act only on behalf of the patient, in their case. So, for example, if Joe is the director of IT and Joe is the patient in this particular meeting, Joe's not going to be talking about bandwidth, right? He's only going to be talking about what a patient would think. So she said they were doing a new scheduling system for their inpatients. And the idea was that there needed to be more transparency. So for example, if her rehab team was going in to do technique to help with rehabilitation, often they would find an empty room because the person would be out in testing or some other appointment within the hospital. So they needed to have transparent scheduling so that all the people who were serving that patient could see. And the patient raised his hand in that meeting and said, I want to know my schedule too. And she said, oh, everyone in the meeting was like, oh, that's going to be a mess. And he said, I get it. It's not going to be 100% accurate. But what if it's 80% accurate? Like, I'm already feeling out of control. I have cancer. So if I could know my schedule, even some of the time, then I could make decisions. I could know when my wife should be here. And so she doesn't have to feel obligated to be here all the time. And they did. And they created transparent scheduling. And she said, it's not perfect, but it has really improved patient satisfaction.
It's such a good example. And it's so practical because everybody can practice the patient perspective.
Yeah. There's,
whoever your customer is, if you serve an internal customer, external customer, whoever it is that you're serving, somebody can take on their point of view in any important discussion. It's such a fun example, and one that's fun that you could just stumble across it by having a conversation with your sister. So we shared a article that we wrote. It was published in Fast Company, and obviously we were sharing it around social media, and we shared it on Facebook.
Yeah.
And Facebook's a little bit different beast than LinkedIn. LinkedIn got all the business responses and, hey, this is great, I can use this, and so on. On Facebook, it got a different response. Can you talk to us about that response and then what you have to say about that? Because, and the reason I'm asking this question, because if there is one thing that burns in the core of Karen Hurd, and I do know you in this regard, is your commitment to both speaking truth yourself, but also helping other people to speak up.
Yeah, so that response really broke my heart, but it did not surprise me, because there was sarcasm, and you know, people were making comments like, "Oh, well, you know, why don't people speak up? Because they'll get fired if they do." Kinds of comments. And then, you know, what I love about social media is you can kind of stalk people and figure out who is it that's saying these comments, right? So, you know, as I clicked on the profiles, these are professional people with multiple degrees.
Yeah, there was like such an extent of cynicism and like comments. So the one you shared of, "Oh, yeah, of course they're not speaking up, they get fired," or, you know, "Jobs are tight right now, so I'm not going to do anything to tick off my boss," or the person who said, "You know, they don't pay me enough for my ideas. They pay me to work, not to contribute."
Yeah. Or, you know, "Do you think," and insert, you know, very, very famous executive here, "really cares about his warehouse workers?
What the warehouse workers have to say."
Yeah. You know, and so that means that's why this book is so important. Mm-hmm. Because there are, and it's consistent with the research, right? That's why it shouldn't surprise us. And when we go and do our conferences and we have collect all these moments of courage from everyone, sometimes there's some really crazy stuff that people have had to deal with, you know? And so to me, it's just validating that more people need this book. There is cynicism. And you, even if you are a really great leader, the possibility that someone has worked for a negative leader in the past is making them hold back more than you may think. So that's even more reason that you have to be gentle, create an environment of safety, say that you want ideas five times, five different ways, be clear in your new hire orientation that you really want people's ideas, respond with regard, even when people bring you silly ideas. You know, that's your favorite. That's your favorite thing. I know you've done an episode about that one recently, you know, of how do you show up with gratitude and provide information, you know, and then again, invite them back for more.
So let's talk about leaders for just a second here who might hear this kind of a message and have a different response. And I doubt at this point, this is the 66th episode of Leadership Without Losing Your Soul, so I doubt there are any leaders who fit this profile unless you've just stumbled across this episode by chance. But they're definitely out there. We've heard from them. We see them, and we're told by team members about them all the time. And these are the leaders who say, "Listen, I don't need a lot of ideas. I just need people to do what I tell them. I've got the plan. I've got the answers. Let's just do this. Just do your work." They're still out there.
They are.
What would you tell those leaders if you could speak to them?
You are going to be at a distinct lack of competitive advantage if you are leading that way. Because right now, particularly right now, you need to tap into the work that only humans can do, you know? And so, yes, AI can make some decisions for you, but the leader who can tap into the creativity and the micro-innovation of every single person is going to be far, if you have 12 people thinking well about the right things, it's pretty arrogant to think that you by yourself are going to be able to compete against those 12 hearts and minds if they're really engaged.
Arrogant and stressful ultimately too, right? It's stressful having to have all the answers when you've got a team that can do the work with you. All right, well, let's close up today by asking two questions. First would be, someone's listening today. Obviously, the action we want them to take is go get courageous cultures if you don't have it. But practically, as a leader, I get back to my team after the show today. What's the first thing that I can start doing to practically build a courageous culture in my team, my organization?
Start with clarity and say, I really want your ideas about this topic. Just pick one. pick a topic. Don't try to get all the ideas at once. Just pick one topic and then invite them on the journey to contribute their best ideas and really listen and then respond to what you're hearing with real gratitude.
And I definitely want to emphasize that really listen part, because a lot of leaders will get excited and ask for the ideas. And then as they start hearing things, they go, oh, wait, we can't do that. Well, no, wait, you don't understand. Well, wait, you... And all of those things are true. They don't understand. They may not have all the information, but you don't want to respond immediately with defensiveness, or you undermine the fact that you just asked the question.
Right.
And so to be able to ask the question, say, this is where we really need ideas. What do you have? I'd like to hear your thinking on this. And then to pause and take it in. And to just at that point say, thank you. Thank you for thinking about this. Thank you for sharing it. We'll process it, but right now I just want to say thank you for making the contribution. Mm-hmm. And if we can start with just that, it's so transformative to have those experiences. All right, so final question, and then we'll talk about some of the logistical aspects of where to get everything. But for you, if you had just 15 seconds left on Earth,
not a good conversation in a pandemic.
But if you had 15 seconds to record your key vital message with regard to leadership, courageous cultures, to help leaders, what would that be?
Well, you know, really, we always say, be the leader you want your boss to be. And I really think that if you operate around that principle, how would you like to be led? You know, are you showing up with authenticity? You know, that to me, that's, I'm all about leading like you from your best self. Not trying to play a game, but just really show up with good intentions, a strong vision, and an ability to execute in a way that you win without losing your soul.
And that's what it's all about. All right. So Courageous Culture is available today. In addition to the book, there is an executive strategy guide. Tell us a little bit about that and where to find it.
Yeah, so as you're going through the book, at the end of all the chapters, there's either questions or really practical processes and tools that you can implement with your team. So you can read the book together and work on the work. What we feel good about this executive strategy guide, which is free if you buy the book, is it's a fillable PDF that enables you to record and has additional resources, and it has shareables so you can distribute. You just print out the idea model and give it to everybody on your team. And all of that is available for you to use to make the executing on this much easier.
And you walk your team through every step by step and go through it together. Courageous Cultures is not a book that you can read it cover to cover, but it's really a book to read and work through with your team and to do the work. And if you'll do the work, you can build the courageous culture full of micro innovators, problem solvers, customer advocates that moves your team from safe silence to consistent contribution. Karen Hurt, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show.
Well, this was fun. I was glad we could do it.
Until next time, be the leader you want your boss to be.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.